Hello, Cinefans. I'm Kendall Kruver, and this is Watching Classic Movies. Melodrama. It's much more than Douglas Sirk-directed mid-century dramas. I had a great talk with writer, film programmer, podcaster, and teacher Millie DiCirico about what melodrama really means, what we love about it, and the surprising places you can find melodrama, from horror to action flicks.
Welcome, Millie. Thanks for joining me today.
I love being back. This is awesome.
This is the third time you've been on, and I believe you're the first person to be on three times on the show. I'm always thinking of things I want to talk to you about.
I love it. I feel like, who is it, Alec Baldwin or somebody who's been on, hosted SNL the most times in the history of the show? I kind of feel that way about your show.
I'm going to have to make you a five-timer. Over time, let's see if I could keep it rolling that long so I even could do that. This time around, I really want to talk to you about melodrama because you changed my view of what melodrama is. I had kind of thought early silent films with a lot of melodramas or Douglas Sirk in the 50s, you know, Written on the Wind, that's a melodrama, but there's actually a lot more to it. The movie that you mentioned that made me think that there was more to it was The Honeymoon Killers, which you could call crime, drama, some might call it horror, but it really, really is a melodrama too. So just tell me about your view of melodrama and how you come to the conclusion that a film is a melodrama.
Well, I think for me, and this is, again, this is probably just coming at it from my own experiences as a woman, there seems to be this like kind of feminized aspect to melodrama that makes it different from regular drama, right? I mean, and I think that that's what gave the term melodrama such a negative connotation for so many years, which I'm always like trying to reclaim. I'm like wanting to reclaim the perception of what a melodrama is, because I think people were like, oh, those are like weepy women's pictures. Like
lady problems.
Lady problems. To me, I feel like, yes, we can sort of go into these films and analyze and deconstruct them and look at the generic aspects of them in the view of a melodrama or whatever. But I feel like the whole term itself, I feel like, you know, there is an era of it, certainly a high point, like a post-World War II kind of era of the melodrama of the women's picture. But I think that there's a lot in horror. And I feel like the thing that makes it kind of similar to horror in certain ways is that there's fears happening. In melodrama, there's fears of loss of family, loss of identity, like loss of, you know, when we talk about The Honeymoon Killer specifically, you know, Martha, the character of Martha in the film, I mean, I know that she's based on a real person, is very motivated by this fear of losing this man that she feels that she's in love with and is bonded to. And I feel like that is the kind of link between this. This is why like a movie like The Honeymoon Killers can be like different things, is that it's working on all these different levels. But I think a melodrama inherently is about women's fears, or like a feminized fear, a feminized concern, you know, which again is interesting to me as a woman, like just processing it, you know?
And I mean, when I thought about movies that they were being called melodrama that featured men, they were kind of in feminized roles, like Sunset Boulevard, William Holden, and The Graduate, Dustin Hoffman. They're experiencing the world in a lot of ways like women do, because of the way an older woman treats them.
Yeah.
I still see it as mostly female, but it's interesting that it does include that too.
Yeah. But melodrama was seen as camp for a very long time, and I think still is to a certain degree. Because of those big emotions, because of the like soap opera juiciness of the stories, the tragedies, the sadness, the, like I said, the big acting, big pivotal plot scenes and stuff like that, that was kind of seen as camp. And I started thinking about this like recently, because in rewatching a lot of movies from my childhood, I was like, there seems to be this almost kind of like a straight guy camp film. And I think I would kind of call it like maybe like a Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze, or, you know, something where it's basically a male melodrama.
Yes.
You know? because if you actually take a movie like Roadhouse, as ridiculous as it sounds to like talk about Roadhouse being a melodrama, there's a lot going on in that movie. Yeah. There's a very deep male friendship going on in that movie that turns tragic at a certain point with yes. big emotions.
No, it totally works for me.
And, you know, like a big story of somebody who's trying to start their life over and they've experienced yeah. loss or like some kind of tragedy that were kind of what happened, but that informs all of their actions and their thoughts. And so there's components to it, right?
It totally works. When you said it, I thought, oh my gosh, it really is. It's not so much lady problems as emotional problems, which are considered the domain of ladies. But then, you know, Swayze went through some things in that movie. He had a lot of emotions. And sometimes it's, you know, more physical how, yeah, he's pounding people in the face and stuff, but.
Oh yeah, it's so over the top. Instead of getting a Betty Davis slap across the face, it's like a guy getting thrown across a room into a cocktail table. I don't know. It's a different feeling. But I also think that that's like an interesting kind of shift to the traditional notions of what a melodrama is that yeah. a woman heavy genre, women's pictures, you know, feminized storytelling, that you can actually have like straight guy melodrama, straight guy camp, you know, yeah. at the end of the day too.
What made you start using the word melodrama?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it was just sort of like a generic term that I had heard over and over again. You know, just I remember when I was growing up in the 80s, my mom was really into soap operas, and she was specifically into, her show was General Hospital. She loved General Hospital, watched it, and I watched it with her kind of every afternoon, you know, on ABC. And I just remember like hearing words about like, oh, melodramatic. This is so melodramatic. Why do you watch these melodramas, these soap operas? And I just thought, oh, it's being kind of used pejoratively almost, you know, like it's just like soap opera crap. And I just thought, oh, that's really interesting. So I think I just had internalized that word for so long yeah. that when I started working in the classic movie world or whatever, I was like, oh, there's like this term, it keeps coming up again, melodrama. And there's like now I understand that there's like an arc of these melodramas like throughout film history and again like the high points of it and everything. But why am I still seeing this term as being used? Like, why is it still pejorative? Like, why are we discussing it as if these are like inferior movies?
I mean, to me, it's societal misogyny.
Yes.
But there's more to it than that, though. It's something about the emotions it brings out, how naked that is for people, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like there's the convention of telling a story that's really keyed up and, you know, very like salacious or kind of just over emotional,
yeah.
which, you know, again, is probably like has its place in camp and that kind of stuff. But there's also like the kind of stylistic conventions of it, music cues and the scene, like, you know, a lot of like these melodramas take place within people's homes. So you're watching people on couches and having cocktails. And so yeah. you're processing the stylistic elements of the genre too. And that to me is kind of like where I think somebody like Cirque is like so good at it, creating that visual language of a melodrama, of the snow and the, yeah. you know, the cabins and the, you know, that kind of stuff that now we think so much of as that, as like melodramatic.
The entrapment of various frames, the windows, a TV screen.
Yeah.
How everybody's kind of imprisoned by the way they're expected to be. Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's clear to me why I think of that as melodrama. Definitely. So what are some of the movies that you like that you would consider melodrama?
I'm sitting in front of a Written on the Wind poster and talking about this, by the way. I think that there's when if you know you've got the classic melodrama stuff like we just talked about, like Cirque and the Cukor and the William Wyler and that kind of stuff. But then I feel like there's a lot of crossover in that kind of thriller horror way.
Yeah,
I certainly see a handful of like horror films that are centered around like women. You know, I think the term they call it like hagsploitation or
right. I was wondering if that's what you meant. Yeah. Yeah. Because that does work.
Definitely. That, I think, is melodrama. Like, I think that it's like melodrama plus slasher equals exploitation, perhaps. The core right. of what a hagsploitation movie is, it is primarily about a female character, a feminized character, that is feeling the need to trap people that they love
yeah.
in order to keep them in their lives. They're so afraid of losing something. They're afraid of losing their man or their kids or their something that they have to resort to these like drastic measures to do so, which involve kidnapping, you know, murder, like whatever.
These ladies from the 40s and 50s just amping up what they did back then. Like, talk didn't work, so I'm going to get a knife, you know?
Like, I know. And like, and Joan, I felt like she did the transition of straitjacket. Isn't that straitjacket?
The woman with the axe.
The woman with the axe.
Yeah.
Where it's the perfect bridge between like the melodrama to the hagsploitation or the horror.
Oh, you're right. Even the way she dresses. The way she dresses could be in something like Queen Bee.
Yeah.
Like those costumes would fit in perfectly there.
Yeah. I mean, she's Joan, like classic Joan, but then she's got this crazy eye with homicide on her on the brain because she's yeah. afraid of losing a man and her sexiness or her sex appeal, you know?
It almost feels like an evolution.
Yeah.
The natural evolution of melodrama is... were because it like we've said, we've connected it to action already, right? You could connect it to anything. But now I'm thinking, like, is this why part of the reason why I'm so attracted to horror is because of all these emotions that are being expressed freely and wildly? It's so similar, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I think that I'm drawn to these types of movies because I think emotions are interesting. I think that when yeah. people have complex emotions within the construct of like a movie character, I think that's a very compelling thing. If you listen to my podcast or, you know, I'm very, very much into characters. Like I like knowing the motivations and the sometimes like the personality quirks and the psychology yeah. of certain characters. Like that to me is just fascinating. I think I just love the human brain and the experience, you know? But I think that that is a reason why I'm drawn to like these types of genres, horror, melodrama, thriller, because it kind of forces you to have to like understand a character motivation because yeah. that character motivation is what's informing the action of the film, right? Like, why does this character want to kill this other person? Why has this character killed? Why does, you know, Norman Bates do the things that he does or whatever, you know? And that's fascinating to me. It's complex. And I think with melodrama, it's that thing too, because you're like processing it on a level where you're like, why is this drama happening? Why is Jane Wyman afraid to date Rock Hudson?
Yeah.
You know, where does that come from? And then the movie tells you where it comes from. And it's this internalized class scenario.
Yes. You know? Yeah. It's occurred to me that that's a very real thing, to want to make sense of things, to want to understand a person. I always thought of melodrama as being kind of over the top and larger than life. And it certainly yeah. is in a lot of ways. But I think the thing that makes it work, that makes it resonate, is those very real things, those yeah. real feelings. You know, like back on Honeymoon Killers, you really feel for this woman who is afraid of losing love, who is afraid of being alone. It totally makes sense to me in that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, this definition... I wrote down several definitions of melodrama, and, you know, a crisis of human emotion was one of them, but there's also just a work characterized by extravagant theatricality and the predominance of plot and physical action over characterization. So it's like, it's saying that it's plot over characterization, but that plot doesn't make sense without the characterization. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think what you're saying makes a lot more sense in that specific way of looking at it.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, sometimes, like, depending on the movie, maybe that doesn't get ironed out too much. And it requires right. us as viewers to, like, do a lot of, we have to infer more about what's actually happening. But I think that that is, like, some challenge that I just am obsessed with. And that's why yeah. I'm like, I'm always trying to figure out what the primary motivation for somebody acting in a horror or a melodrama or something versus like do I really think about like why Austin Powers is the way he is?
Right. It's like, who is this
Austin
person?
Powers movies? Yeah. It's
like, who is this person? Like, you know exactly who Austin Powers is. It's not meant to be deep, right? Because he's not meant to be deeply human, but like this stuff is, it is all about it. So I do think that's just really interesting, because I don't think about the plot in these movies, actually. I actually think about the core person, who's a woman in crisis. I mean, that's what I'm thinking about. And that's why there's things like the more modern ones, like Pearl. It's just a perfect example of it.
Yeah, I was actually really thrilled that when I heard that they were going to do like an origin story, because I think when I saw X, I was a little like, I don't know what I thought about that. I mean, honestly, I know the influence, you know, being a grindhouse film person.
Yeah.
Likes that world and that style. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is like a definite thing. But then when they were like, oh yeah, we're going to do like her origin story, I was like, this could be interesting. And I actually like Pearl a lot more.
I went back and forth. Like, there were things about the way X was filmed that I thought was better, but what has stuck with me, what do I keep thinking about, is that performance. This just ragged, empty person who's trying to figure something out. Like, basically a psychopath who doesn't understand that they're a psychopath, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It's possible. I think that I would like to see more of that. Like, I'd like to see more of that in movies, just really digging into a character. And I think maybe you're saying this in comparing the films, is that there's so much to love about the genre greatness of X. But when you go a little deeper, when it's still genre, but you go a little deeper with the character, it's always going to be more compelling. And that's what you're going to be thinking about. I think a lot of Todd Haynes, I mean, he's known for loving melodrama as a form, but I think that that's why he works, is because he's also in love with his characters.
Yeah.
You know, like the Karen Carpenter story?
Yes.
How it seems like it's going to be this joke because it's dolls.
Yeah.
But he dug into who she was and how she was feeling.
Yeah. This is like a thing that I love about him as a filmmaker, and kind of like what I was talking about earlier about being able to like compartmentalizing the thematic components of a genre versus the stylistic components of a genre. And forgive me, I'm in like grad level school programs right now dealing with genre and reading a lot of theory. So I hope this is not going to be like too academic or whatever. But the thing about Todd Haynes is that he's creating the story, which has its roots in melodrama, especially in a movie of May, December. Yes. Right? But if we're going to talk specifically about Karen Carpenter, that is like a Hollywood tragedy, right? That's like a music industry Hollywood story at its core, kind of a melodramatic base, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then he takes the style of a melodrama, or the components of like a melodrama in the more stylistic way, like a Barbie doll or Lifetime films or something, and he like weaves that into the story too. So it's like a melodrama on a melodrama. It's like a Russian nesting doll of these generic elements that just, it's like this pure like bomb of deliciousness. Like, you're just like, wow, like, he really knows what he's doing. He's really like taking something and removing the parts and then like putting it back in. And like, I'm just like, it's fascinating. And that's why I love him so much, you know?
He is a filmmaker. He doesn't want to just go out and make that movie. Like, he's going into all the details of things and playing. He seems like a boy playing to me a lot of the time. And there are things that sit wrong with me about May, December, because the story of Willy Fallau, he's from my town, basically.
And, I didn't know that.
Well, the outskirts, but nearby, in a district where my mom taught school at one time, not that time, but the horror of that what that poor boy was going through has stuck with me for years. So the fact that he wasn't at all informed of what was happening, all that does bother me. But the film is so darn good at what it does that I am able to separate a little bit. And what you're saying about unpacking it and putting it back together again, I think May, December absolutely does that too. It's just so interesting to compare the Carpenter film to May, December, and how he at core is doing the same thing, but the dressing, like you're saying, the stylistic parts of it are so different, but all just solidly melodrama, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like, too, I think it's just like having, you know, you can always tell when like somebody is a fan of the genre because they're kind of like, well, I'm going to make the thing, but then I'm going to package it in the notions of the thing, of what we visually think is the thing. Because when I'll say that when I first saw May December, it took me a minute to figure out what was going on, right? I knew that it was going to be based around that Mary Kay Letourneau Be Life Allow story. I didn't know how. At first I thought is it going to be like a complete retelling? Like, I thought they were going to use the names and everything.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different. I didn't realize it was just kind of like inspired by, or, you know, like a take on that story. And then I was kind of like looking at how it was being rolled out in terms of the style of it. And I was like, this is very odd. This feels very odd and kind of uncanny. And I don't know what to think about Natalie Portman. And like, what is she doing right now? And then I was like, wait a minute, is this like some sort of like three women persona thing happening, you know? Like,
yes. Oh, I see that. It's unsettling like, in that way. Yeah. Robert Altman's Three Women. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. I was like thinking, am I watching something where, you know, it's a movie about women's identities and, you know, assuming other people's identities, and the actress coming in to play a real person in the movie is obviously like a perfect vehicle for that, right?
Yeah.
But then I was like, but this also feels, with the music cues especially, this feels very much like a soap opera or like a Lifetime movie or something that is like something from my childhood. I kind of talked about it. I talked about it on my Substack, but I was like in that kind of Mary Hartman kind of way, where it was like consciously aware of the fact that it was, you know, referencing a soap opera, right?
You knew what it was doing. Yeah.
Right. So I started getting that feeling too, where I was like, oh, I think it knows that it's making fun of the stylistic elements of a soap opera or of a Lifetime movie. And then I was like, wow, this is like really crazy. Like this whole like experience I'm having watching, okay, this is a lot different than when I press start at the beginning.
It is much more of consequence than I would have thought. Because
because
people were talking about like it was just this purely campy thing. And I don't know, something about that word. It's such a dismissal, and it's not precisely what's happening there. Like you can't completely deny it, but it's more than that.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I kind of think about when in terms of just like a throwaway version of melodrama, the word, or camp, the word. It's just kind of like, oh, this is just like artifice, fluff,
like it's dumb stuff. Yeah.
Dumb, or like it's like hilarious without any thought. I actually think it's a lot more thoughtful.
It's not shallow.
So when I use the word camp in melodrama, I use it with esteem. I'll just say it.
Yes.
But sometimes people use those words and it's to denigrate or whatever.
Like it's just a joke. And camp is more deeply felt, I think, to, you know, deep genre fans. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I started thinking about it in terms of the core of the story is based on this true life tabloid. I mean, I remember, I want to ask you actually, like, it's so interesting that you told me now that he's like from your town.
Yeah.
Because I remember it being such a huge story when I was growing up. Like when that happened, was there a lot of, I mean, I just imagine, was like the town like shut down by everything that had happened, or like what?
So that was like the Burien area, and I was in Seattle. So, you know, I knew it because my grandparents lived there. So I would like visit once a week. So it wasn't like I was there really seeing the impact of it. And also it was just a time when you didn't know as much about what people were doing. You would see like a local news report. For me, I think I saw People magazine more than I saw any local thing. It was just that I was where my own mother had taught, and it would never, I understood how absolutely obscene this woman's behavior was based on my mom's own moral compass, and how that would never even occur to her to do something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what it was, really, was more national stuff that I was seeing. It wasn't affecting me on a local level. And it was probably because it wasn't specifically where I lived. It was just the whereabouts of the area. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always really fascinating to me when like national news stories happen in like the places where people actually live and like how it kind of plays out for them. But yeah, it was such a huge deal when it happened. And I don't know if it's because I don't know what I was thinking about, because I knew that Vila Folau was like, is he Samoan or Hawaiian or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah. For some reason, I assume, like, I don't know, that felt very kind of like, I'm half Filipino and I have a lot of relatives that look like him, like physically look like him. And for some reason that like made me feel, I don't know, a little bit more connected or interested in the story. So I think maybe it was just sort of like for me, like I found another way into the drama that kind of affected me a little bit more, I guess. But then.
Yeah. Well, just the racial element of it hasn't been discussed nearly enough.
Oh, it's such a huge part of it, I feel like.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think anybody's really, I mean, at least from my knowledge, I mean, maybe there's something out there, like a think piece or something, but I was like, oh, it's so interesting that this is not talked about, because I feel like it's a huge part of the story.
And it really is.
But it's also like, so thinking about May, December, pulling from this huge, dramatic tabloid fodder for years kind of event, the story, and then in a way commenting on that in the movie, like by the way that the movie is shot, by the way that it's stylistically laid out, where it's like, again, conscious of its own tabloidness or soap operaness.
Yeah. And how it's basically, this actress is going to make what sounds like a Lifetime movie, and it's set like a Lifetime movie. That's so interesting to me too.
Yeah. That's, and again, maybe I was reading too much into it, but it felt that way. It felt like, Todd Haynes is sort of creating this nesting doll of influence and commentary. Yeah. You know?
But then it's just also this traumatized man who's never grown up at the center of it.
Oh, I couldn't.
It's that movie is men's problems to me, you know?
Definitely.
The women are just villainous. And I haven't really seen a lot of talk about acknowledging that hat.
Yeah, that was, again, like part of the movie that just really rocked me. It's just sort of like in a weird way, kind of understanding maybe that there was something about that relationship being as long as it was and having all the implications of that was you know, like something I just had never thought about before, you know. I was just thinking, well, I mean, how is it for him, like, well, many years later,
I felt that it was bad, but I didn't understand the contours of it until this movie.
And like, there's also the idea, and I, like I said, I think I really thought about this too, because I know it was shot in Georgia, which is the state that I live in. And it was set in Savannah. I mean, it was shot and set in Savannah. So the actual story of it is taking place in the South, which I think also adds this other like component to it in terms of like a melodrama, because, you know, you've got this tradition of these like Southern melodramas, you know?
Right.
And the idea of the South being kind of a, you know, a place where there are certain traditions and there's certain like social niceties.
Right.
And it's this kind of like code of living that certainly like lends itself to melodrama, you know, and I think about like the Tennessee Williams stuff and the Southern Gothic stuff.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of mid-century movies, definitely too.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's like, I mean, at first I was thinking, oh, he probably shot it in Georgia because he got a tax break, and good for him. Get that tax break, Todd. But then I'm like, oh no, just set it here too creates this whole other layer of complexity when it comes to the story of this family being who they are, living in this like Southern town, everybody just kind of like having to go out to dinner and interact with like all these other people that know that this family is,
and
you know, comes from a scandalous
so
place.
So polite. Yes. Oh gosh. Yes. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I do feel like he takes the form. I mean, I think that talking about his movie is talking about the whole history of it, really, because he just moves it forward, but understands exactly what it's about and how it's always more than this light thing. I mean, it totally wraps it up in a bow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it was so great to finally talk to you about this. I just love this topic. I could probably go on.
Too.
It's something that I hope people take a little more seriously, you know, because of May, December, but I don't know that it will really happen. I don't know that that's really the way it's going to be.
Well, and like, Dan, I think I'm just sort of like, first of all, I know that you and I see eye to eye on this, which is like why I love chatting with you. And I was like thrilled when you wanted to talk about melodrama, because I think I'm always trying to give it its flowers. Like, I'm just sort of I mean, of course this is like campy and funny and there are moments of high drama and it's like, you know, so over the top, but I feel like there's a importance of that, or it can be funny and weird, but also be interesting and compelling and worth talking about. It's not just like
all those things,
trash, you know?
It's, not, but we love trash too. But yes.
We love trash. We can try. Listen, I just rewatched Total Recall, and there's like a moment where Arnold talks about how his dream woman is both demure and sleazy. And that's what I think about. That's like a mantra for life, is being demure and sleazy at the same time. You could have both.
That's melodrama. Thank you so much, Billy. Always a blast to talk to you.
I love it. Thanks for having me again. It's wonderful.
To get more fantastic film insight from Millie, go to watchingclassicmovies.com for information about subscribing to her Substack and how to get her book, TCM Underground, 50 Must-See Films from the World of Classic, Cult, and Late Night Cinema, which she co-wrote with Katoya Murray. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review wherever you listen. And thank you for your support. This is Kendall Kruver, watching classic movies. Until next time.